The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Green Scene on The Pat Kenny Show with AIB, working alongside Irish communities towards a low carbon future. AIB, for the life you're after.
Dr. Ruth Freeman is with us, Director of Science for Society at Science Foundation Ireland. And she's doing public relations for one of the most disliked organisms on the planet, the mosquito. You've found something positive about
them. I know,
it's
hard to find anyone who likes a mosquito, but a species that might be thanking them is Hawaii's honey creeper birds. And honey creepers are a species of small, colourful birds that only live in Hawaii. And there used to be about 50 different species of these, Anton, but there's only 17 left. And of those 17, 11 are endangered. And these are really important birds. They help to pollinate some of the amazing plants you get in Hawaii. And they keep the forests there healthy. And the forests are the things that filter the clean drinking water for the people that live there. So they're really, really important. And one of the biggest threats to these beautiful birds is avian malaria. And malaria was introduced to the islands in the 1800s by accident, and these birds are not immune at all. So a single bite can kill a honey creeper.
Surely that means mosquitoes would be a problem rather than a solution.
Well, we'll get to the solution bit now. One second. So there's only tiny little pockets of birds that live up in the higher mountains where it's too cold for the mosquitoes that have survived. But obviously with climate change, those cool areas are getting warmer. So the mosquitoes are making their way up the mountains to these last remaining pockets of birds. But what people have tried to do, there's a group there called Birds Not Mosquitoes. They've decided to borrow actually from a methodology that we've used to protect ourselves from malaria, which is to release modified mosquitoes. And these male mosquitoes are, they have a bacteria inside them called Wolbachia. And this is something that you do find in insects. But if a male mosquito is infected with this bacteria and it mates with a female, she essentially becomes infertile, so her eggs don't hatch. So this is being used as a way to cut down the number of mosquitoes in the wild. So it's worked in areas where we've done it for ourselves, but this is the first time it's ever been used as a conservation tool for a non-human species. So far, 10 million of these Wolbachia-infected mosquitoes have been released in Maui, which is just incredible. We're likely to see the numbers of mosquitoes really drop going into the autumn, because that's when you would tend to see the population grow, the new baby mosquitoes from this season would flourish. But we're going to have to keep releasing them. So the research teams there will have to keep releasing them because they only live a few weeks. But these male mosquitoes, they don't bite. Actually, male mosquitoes don't bite at all. They live off nectar like other sort of passive insects. So it's only the females that bite us. And it's the females now that will be, less healthy once they mate with these male mosquitoes.
How do they do the releases?
They just release them in sort of they have them in a big container.
That's just like a bucket of 10 million mosquitoes hanging around the house. I imagine the logistics of getting 10 million mosquitoes into the population has to be tricky.
Well, it's obviously done in waves. I'm not sure they release them all in one go, and they need to put them in lots of different places around the islands. But really, this is critical, because the honey creepers, I mean, over time, they might develop some sort of immunity to avian malaria. We see some early signs of that. So there's one of the honey creepers, which is called a kiwi kiwi, which was they thought it was extinct, but actually it looks like there is a breeding pair left. They've just found one on the island, so there's real hope that they can maybe not they're not all gone. And they do have a special bird conservation centre there. And obviously, when you get down to the last few birds, you can make the decision to bring them in and try and breed them in captivity. But that's a tough decision, because you don't know if that's going to work. So actually doing it in the wild is much better.
Meanwhile, new studies in Scotland are showing that the habitats created by large animals benefit a lot more than the animal itself.
They do. And again, probably not surprising, because we talk about large animals as a keystone species, but this is a lovely example of seeing it in real time. So the beavers in Scotland, they were hunted to extinction in the 16th century, but they were reintroduced in various different areas about 15 years ago. And what we've seen is real success. They are back. They are building their dams in all sorts of different areas in Scotland, and the beavers have been doing really well. But what scientists have seen now is that another little creature that was also on the brink of extinction, the water vole, is using the habitats created by the beaver's dam to create safe spaces for the little water vole to live, which are kind of, it protects them from the mink, which is its main predator. So it can sort of burrow in around the edges of the beaver's dam. And of course, what's lovely is now the water voles in turn are, because they're doing well, they're creating a really, really successful environment for wildflowers because they kind of nibble at grasses and they create spaces for wildflowers to grow. And because their burrows are more shallow, they bring up the soil, the nutrients in the soil for wildflowers. So we're seeing from the introduction of the beaver, the success of the water vole coming back, and now wildflowers growing.
What's the ethics in relation to the reintroduction of species? Because it may be positive in intent, but it is nonetheless eco-engineering of a big ecosystem.
It is, but I mean, when we look at rewilding, maintaining wildness, these are some of the most important tools that we have against climate change and losing biodiversity. So as long as a species was there, I think we're generally seeing really, really positive impacts.
Meanwhile, wombats.
So another ecosystem engineer, wombats in Australia, they build these huge burrows. And this is
the
new
wombat
research.
Is sort of proof that evolution can't be real. No natural selection could design something as bad as the wombat,
I mean,
could they?
The marsupials in general, let's face it, they're one of the more unusual branches. But you know, they are beautifully evolved and balanced. And their burrows, which have big wide entrances and they have many, many chambers. This is new research that was published last month in the Journal of Mammalogy. And what they found was when they looked at 28 different big wombat burrow sort of warrens, that species were using them as refuges from fire. And we've all seen fire now in Australia as a big threat to wildlife. So they found over 56 different vertebrate species that were using these burrows as refuges.
Using them while they were actively in use by the wombat or dormant?
Dormant ones. So they're all sharing this space underground, which is much cooler than above ground in extreme temperatures. So things like bush rats and Tachinus, which is a bit like a Tasmanian devil, monitor lizards and birds. We're just scratching the surface of learning how these spaces that are engineered by animals might be helping other animals. So again, it's when you leave the ecosystem alone, nature does sort of seem to find a way.
You would wonder that the wombat would be satisfied to have, how many different animals you say? Another 20 species?
They probably weren't all there at the same time.
Well, nonetheless, like if you've gone to the hassle of digging out the burrow and you arrive home and discover that there's a monitor lizard living in it, you might have a word or two with them.
Maybe that was a room they weren't using anymore.
Ruth, as ever, thank you very much. That is Ruth Freeman, Dr. Ruth Freeman, who is Director of Science for Society at Science Foundation Ireland.